The Local Administration and Veteran Affairs Subcommittee will come to order. Members, please remember to speak into your microphones. Victoria, please call roll.
Chair Toledo?
Here.
Vice Chair Smith?
Here.
Democratic Ranking Member Goff Marcil?
Here.
Representatives Barnaby?
Here.
Bartleman?
Here.
Benjamin?
Here.
Daly excused. DeSegli?
Here.
Gia Lombardo?
Here.
Harding?
Here.
Joseph?
Here.
Mello?
Here.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika?
Here.
Sabatini?
Here.
Salzman?
Here.
Snyder?
Here.
Woodson?
Here.
Quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, members. By your presence, we have a quorum. Due to Rep. Daly's excused absence today, Rep. Hart was appointed ex officio to participate and vote in today's meeting. Welcome, Representative Hart.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
I want to remind everyone that the House has implemented detailed procedures designed to make our meeting safer during the present time. Audience members and presenters approaching the podium to speak must keep their mask on while addressing the committee. This is to ensure your safety and the safety of those speaking after you. I also want to remind members to speak into your microphone when voting to ensure our administrative assistant hears your voice. Please make sure your cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or placed in silent mode if you have a laptop. Please make sure that sound is turned off. And members, today we have 7 bills on our agenda. Okay, we will start by taking up House Bill 385 by Representative Haig relating to alcoholic beverages license Lake and Sumter counties. Rep. Haig, you are recognized to explain your bill.
There we go. Thank you and good morning. I appreciate it, Madam Chair and members. So, House Bill 385 is a libations bill. So the Villages is one of the state's largest economic drivers and has been incredibly successful in bringing people to our state and region, creating unparalleled economic growth. An important part of the Village's lifestyle has been the entertainment areas, such as the town centers, for nearly 20 years. The Villages has obtained license from the state, which allows patrons to move about the town center venues with their libations. The Villages has acquired new property and will be continuing the development of the lifestyle it is famous for. This bill merely reflects the new geographical boundaries of the community. There's no substantive changes to how the licensing works. It just reflects the new land to be developed. And that is the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Representative Haig, I believe there's an amendment on the bill.
Yes, ma'am.
You're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you. House Bill 385 technical amendment is Chapter 2014-229 Laws of Florida deleted the term unincorporated area describing Sumter County in order to encompass all the areas of Sumter County. This bill includes the previously deleted term as a deletion, creating a technical inconsistency. The amendment simply removes this term.
Thank you. Members, are there questions on the amendment? We've received public requests to comment on the amendment. No comments. We have received comments in support. Okay. Members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the amendment? Representative Haig, you are recognized to close on your amendment.
Wave close.
Members without objection show the amendment is adopted. Members, we are now back on the bill as amended. We've received comments on the bill as amended. Joseph Salzberg from the Villages waves in support. David Sardar would like to speak on the bill. He is with Self-Statement Commentator and County Cities. And is he here to present?
No, he's not here.
Okay. That's the final comment. Members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the bill as amended? Representative Haig, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Wave close.
Representative Haig, having closed, Tori, please call the roll on the bill.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Gia Lombardo?
Yes.
Goff Marcil?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Chair Toledo?
Yes.
17 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, House Bill 385 is reported favorably. Congratulations. Next, we will take up House Bill 751 by Representative Clemens relating to the City of Gainesville, Alachua County. Representative Clemens, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman, Ranking Member, members of this august committee. It's see you bright, shining faces this morning. Representative Joseph, make sure you had coffee today. House Bill 751 is a local bill submitted to our delegation by the City of Gainesville. It was presented at our local delegation hearing and received a unanimous support from all members, bipartisan, of our Gainesville delegation. It's an innovative local bill that assists in meeting the needs of the tech-savvy district in the City of Gainesville, known as Innovation Square. It's between downtown and the University of Florida. It's the site of the former Alachua General Hospital, and it is a food desert, if you understand what a food desert is. The vision for Innovation Square is to create a technology, science, research-oriented development in effort to both retain and attract intellectual capital within Gainesville and transform that area to live, work, and play for the companies that are looking to live there. The legislation will allow employees the opportunity to continue to brainstorm and have dialogue on important issues while enjoying a drink after work right outside their offices. This local bill authorizes the issuance of a special license to sell alcoholic beverages to a food truck operator for the consumption of the alcoholic beverages within the confines of the food truck park as defined by the Gainesville City Code. It's in a specific location in Innovation Square. It requires not only the compliance of the city's rules, but also the food truck park would be permanently fenced, have sun sails, and seating. Under Florida law, food trucks are unable to have more than a temporary license. That's why we're here today. The City of Gainesville can issue a temporary alcohol license. Only the state can issue a permanent alcohol license. Drinks will be available to be consumed only within the food truck parked, which will be fenced. There may be more than one food truck. There's plans to have as many as 4 food trucks inside the park that would offer different food. Each of those trucks would be required by the state to have their own individual liquor license. To ensure that the liquor won't be stolen, the bill requires that a food truck be equipped with monitor security system, and the bill prohibits the food truck from selling alcoholic beverages for consumption outside of the park, and there will be no package sales at all. The state will issue the licenses directly to the truck operators. That's the bill, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Clemens. Members, are there any questions on the bill? We received one appearance card. Louis Rotunda, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. On behalf of Trimark Properties, we thank the committee for considering this innovative approach. I would only add one thing to what the representative said. That is that this is a very innovative approach because, as many of you may know, because of COVID, we have not been able to get bricks and mortar buildings. This is the city trying to do something to increase the opportunities for food and drink within this area, and we would appreciate your support. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on this bill? No. Seeing none, Representative Clemens, you are recognized to close on this great bill.
Thank you for your support. I'll waive.
Representative Clemens, having closed, Tori, please call the roll on the bill.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Gia Lombardo?
Yes.
Goff Marcil?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Maluka?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Chair Toledo?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, House Bill 751 is reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you all.
Next, we will take up House Bill 435 by Representative Soroy relating to veterans employment and training. Representative Soroy, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member. Good morning, committee members. House Bill 435 directs Veterans Florida through its Veterans Employment and Training Services Program to serve as the state's principal assistance organization under the United States Department of Defense SkillBridge Program. SkillBridge will match transitioning service members with training and employment opportunities within the state of Florida. From 2014 to 2018, on average, 16,000 service members transitioned from military service to civilian life in Florida, in the state of Florida. Many of these transitioning service members face common challenges during their adjustment to civilian life, including the pursuit of training opportunities and resume building. With the implementation of this program, Veterans Florida will educate stakeholders, including industry representatives and military command and personnel agents, on available opportunities and resources for transitioning service members. They will assist Florida businesses in obtaining approval for skilled workforce training curriculum under the SkillBridge, such as apprenticeships, internships, and fellowships. And it will provide matching services for eligible transitioning service members with training opportunities offered by Veterans Florida or participating businesses. With this bill, we will continue our commitment to making Florida the most supportive state in the nation when it comes to our veterans and their families. Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on the bill? We received some public comments. Dan Hendrickson is a proponent of the bill. Is he here? We have Joseph Marino, who's a proponent of the bill. Is he here? Waves in support. Roy Clark with the Department of Veteran Affairs. Waves in support. Thank you. Taylor Beal, waves in support. And James Musteller, waves in support. Members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on this bill? Okay. Yes. Ranking Member, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And I apologize that we did not get to speak on this bill, because I had a question, and we're past questions, so I'm going to make it into a debate. There was a question about whether it was a may or shall in the bill, and that would just be a concern of mine. I'm going to vote up on it today. But if for further committees, I just wanted to clarify that. But thank you for your good bill.
Any other debate? Representative Soroy, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, for your assistance, committee members. I appreciate your time and wish you a good morning.
Representative Soroy, having closed on his bill, Tory, please call the roll on the bill.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Hoorah. Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Gialombardo?
Yes.
Goff Marcil?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Maluka?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Chair Toledo?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, House Bill 435 is reported favorably. Congratulations. Next, we will take up House Bill 487 by Representative Dugan relating to small-scale development amendments. Representative Dugan, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This bill amends the small-scale land use amendment process, which governs the development of lands, a narrow subset of properties that are subject to the plan amendment process, to streamline the process, reduce the cost and resource consumption and burden to local governments, and give them greater flexibility and control over that process. That is the bill.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions. We have two public appearance forms, one by Jessica Lewis with the Sierra Club. You are recognized.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Chair Toledo, for your time. Appreciate it. We are here to express opposition to HB 487. The bill is a second step in a process that seems to be chipping away at needed assessment and review of development projects. A local comprehensive plan amendment typically begins as a public hearing at municipality or county level, and then moves through 10 additional points of review under pertinent state and county agency or entities. These reviews look at issues such as the impact of proposed development on water resources, military operations, road and traffic operations, and wildlife. There is a way to bypass that 10-point review process and reduce the assessment to one single public hearing. That bypass can occur when a development is considered a small-scale development. The title speaks for itself, small, meaning it is less than 10 acres of land. It does not impact land located in an area of critical state concern. It preserves the overall local comp plan and doesn't require substantive changes to the comp plan. Small-scale development amendments also used to have a cumulative acreage cap of 120 acres, but that was unfortunately eliminated in 2019 via SB 1494, and there is now no cumulative acreage cap that a locality can point to limit small-scale development amendments. Now, HB 487 seeks to increase the acreage threshold, under which a developer can bypass several steps of needed assessment and review. An acreage increase of 500%. It increases the acreage threshold under which a development can count as a small-scale comp plan amendment from 10 acres to 50 acres. To restate that, under this bill, now a development as large as 50 acres can move forward with only a single public hearing and no additional assessment or review by county and state agencies. This is not a direction that we should be moving. We need to bolster public input, environmental review, and social considerations, not reduce them. And for these reasons, we must oppose HB 487. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. Next, we have Jane West with 1,000 Friends of Florida. You are recognized. Waves in opposition. Members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the bill? Vice Chair, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to take this opportunity to, again, to thank Rep. Duggan for reaching out to me on this issue and his willingness to discuss some of my concerns. I'm up on the bill today because I have had to reach out back to my home district, which has an environmentally sensitive rural boundary. And that development is very concerning. It's probably the number one issue in my district. And so I have to do my own due diligence. I've reached back into the county and county attorney to look at this and ensure that that could have no potential impact on a voter-enforced referendum for development in our rural bounds. And I just appreciate the rep's willingness to discuss it. And I'm up on it today, but we'll continue to track this. And I hope this moves smoothly and does not impact my district. And I hope I'm in a position to vote on it on the floor, but if I'm not, I will not. So thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Representative Overdorf, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Rep. Duggan, thank you for bringing this fine bill forward, and we'll certainly be supporting this bill today. And again, thank you for helping to streamline a little bit the local government process. Thank you.
Thank you. Ranking Member Goff-Marcel, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. And I have some concerns with this bill because of the taking the local government out and the shaping your community. Also, the lack of review. I am in favor of streamlining to a point, but when it becomes a situation where there's a lack of review and not enough public input in communities, I come from a community that's very positive in the way we shape our community, and that's done with the community public input. So I have to be down on the bill today, but I do recognize you're wanting to streamline to make it more efficient. But I don't think this does it, and I also have a lot of environmental concerns about it as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Seeing no further debate, Representative Bartleman, you are recognized.
Good morning, and we spoke about this bill this morning. So what I initially liked about it was the going back to the local community for local control, because it's actually going the other way to trust the city council to make the decision. But after hearing the Sierra Club's issue, can you address that and will the local city, you know, have those environmental checkpoints, the water checkpoints? Can you address some of those questions that were raised today?
He could address it in his final closing.
Oh, no worries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other debate? Representative Duggan, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, yes, I'm happy to go through that in greater detail. So the small-scale process today allows whatever amount of public debate the local government wants to allow in that process. Any of you who've served in local government before you got here will know that on your regular meeting schedules, there are often land use amendment applications that you process. So those are public hearings. And in my jurisdiction, Duval County, there are at least four public hearings that are held on small-scale land use amendments. So what this bill does not do is limit that in any way, take any of that away, change that in any way. And in fact, contrary to Ms. Lewis's representation, the step that is now being taken out of having to come here to Tallahassee for the state agencies to give their input has no public input component. It's the state review agencies that comment, and they send their comments back to the local government. So we're not eliminating any aspect of public input and comment on any small-scale land use amendment application. Whatever the local governments allow today will continue. All we are doing, and as to the other components as well, county review of transportation, wetlands, wildlife, any of that, whatever requirements the local government has today for the review of those elements in connection with development review and permitting stays the same. There's nothing in this bill that changes that. All the bill does is increase the acreage amount that can be reviewed solely at the local government level without having to come to Tallahassee to get their input. It enhances local government control, enhances flexibility for the local government. It moves it from 10 acres to 50 acres. Now, I will tell you, most district school boards, when they do their facilities plannings for new schools, and they're planning on new elementary, middle, and high schools, they typically plan on 50 to 60 acres for a high school, a senior high school campus. So that's the size of a piece of property that we're talking about. Just so to give you, you know, some perspective, you wouldn't think that the facilities planning and siting for a senior high school should have to come over here to Tallahassee to have 10 state agencies weigh in on that. And then on the streamlining piece, right now, under small-scale process, there's 4 to 5 local government hearings. It comes here. Then it goes back to the local government, and they have to have the same 4 or 5 hearings. They have to write a staff report. They have to publicly notice it. They have to hold the hearings. So I would ask you to consider what it would be like if all of the items on your agenda today that you're hearing, you spend the time to hear them, the staff writes the analysis, we hold the public comment, and then you have to do it all over again 6 weeks from now before anything can get finally approved. That's what we're eliminating. That's what we're streamlining, but only for 50 acres or less. So with that, I close.
Thank you, Representative Duggan. Having closed, Tori, please call the roll on the bill.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Benjamin?
Yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Giolombardo?
Yes.
Goff Marcil?
No.
Harding?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Chair Toledo?
Yes.
17 yeas, 1 nay.
By your vote, House Bill 487 is reported favorably.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Next, we will take up House Bill 331 by Representative McClure relating to the displacement of private waste companies. Representative McClure, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Committee. Thank you for allowing me to present House Bill 331, Displacement of Private Waste Companies. Currently, waste haulers providing service must be provided a three-year notice of possible displacement. If the jurisdiction decides to displace them before the 3 years, they must compensate the hauler 15 months gross revenue. This bill takes the just compensation to the end of the three-year notice period currently in statute. The purpose is to increase the protections for the private haulers that might be displaced. There are several counties that still operate in a free market in relation to residential and or commercial waste collection. Because of those free markets, there are small businesses operating. This bill doesn't aim to have local government pay just compensation. Rather, it strives to incentivize the local government to continue including all haulers and all haulers operating in a jurisdiction. That is the bill.
Members, are there any questions on the bill? Good Representative morning. Hart, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning. Is this an unfunded mandate?
You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, no, I don't think so. Is that an unfunded mandate to the extent that we're essentially just shifting the three-year, the just compensation from the beginning or middle of the three-year period to the end. That's it.
Any other questions?
Yes, thank you very much. Does this remove in any way or keep local government from having the opportunity to negotiate provisions with the company?
You are recognized for the follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I would say that it actually goes to incentivizing that negotiation, right? So we're rather than them noticing and then displacing after a short period of time, right? It would be at the back end, which I would think would foster negotiations.
You have a follow-up?
Promise this is my last one. I'm not.
You're recognized.
Sorry. Thank you, Madam Chair. Wait, is this good for private companies because it kind of takes out the provision that allow local governments to pay them for the 15 months of gross receipts instead of the three-year notice?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I suppose it is good for the private sector, and that's, I guess, the intent, right? So we have, I don't know, let's call it a dozen jurisdictions around the state that still operate in this free market manner. Within those jurisdictions, you have a lot of, let's call them mom and pop operators, huge capital expenses associated with waste hauling equipment. And so what we're saying is if the jurisdiction, if the local government wants to adjust, if they want to bring it all into one hauler, right, they've got to give a runway and have a dialogue before displacing those private businesses, which again is not out of bounds from how we're doing it now. We're just shifting the time on it because of the capital expense. I hope that answered your questions.
Representative Joseph, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a moment ago, Representative Hart asked about whether this bill had any impact on the ability to negotiate. And I want to direct your attention to lines 34 through 37. Striked out there, I see nothing in this paragraph prohibits the local government and the company from voluntarily negotiating a different notice period or amount of compensation. One of the things I do is I help local governments, and I serve on both sides and have served as an attorney for local government, and it's imperative to be able to negotiate those things on an individual basis. My concern with your bill is it eliminates the opportunity to do that. And unless I'm reading that wrong, it seems to be that your bill expressly takes away that free market ability to negotiate. Is that a correct understanding, or is there something that I'm missing in your bill?
You are recognized to answer the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, I don't think so. I think because we're moving this to the end, that language, there's no need for that language to be in the bill because it's going to be paid out at the end of the 3 years. But during that 3 year period, it is the hope of this legislation, that the private sector would be working with the government to find alternative ways to carry forward without the local government having to pay that displacement compensation. So in my opinion, I think the reason that this language is struck from the bill is just simply because of the posture of the just compensation at the end of the 3 years.
Follow up, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if that's your position, would there be any objection to reinserting that language just to make sure that there's clarity? The reason I ask is because, you know, a lot of times when you're in litigation, because I'm looking at this through a litigation lens, and they can say, well, no, that language used to be there and they took it out, and they can make that argument, and a judge may be able to buy that argument, and they will not have the benefit of listen to your remarks during the committee hearing. What is clear in the text is clear in the text. So if your position is that it doesn't make a difference and they still have that position, that ability to negotiate, then why even strike out the language? Would you consider reinserting the language?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'd love to have the conversation with you. It's not the intent to strike the conversation. I think it's a technical, it's a posture issue more than anything.
No, and Madam Chair?
You're recognized for a follow-up question.
Thank you. And I absolutely agree with you. I just would appreciate you taking that under advisement for the next committee stop, because I think that's the only, like, that's the biggest issue with the bill, because you want to make sure that you have those provisions, especially as a government, whether it's at the local or state level.
Is there a question?
There is going to be a question, especially if it's at the local or state level. I want to make sure that we figure out a way to address it. So you're... A moment ago when I asked the question, you said that it's addressed later on in some other section. Specifically, you said something about the for cause. Where else would that be if I missed it?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, maybe I was unclear, so let me try it over, if that's all right.
Okay.
What I'm saying is, because we're moving the just compensation to the end of the 3 years, that's a known time, right? This paragraph is no longer necessary from a technical standpoint, but it doesn't remove the ability for them to negotiate. That said, I will absolutely work with you if it is your opinion that this language you believe removes the ability for there to be a conversation. That's not the intent. Let's continue to have the conversation. I'm open to that. I don't want it to be unclear.
Thank you.
Members, are there any other questions? Oh, one additional follow-up.
Okay. So I'm just saying it would make it clearer. So I'm not saying it absolutely does that. If you're saying it's in a different section that I'm not familiar with, then it might not address that. But I'm happy to work with you afterwards, and thank you.
I don't think there was a question, but we have two public appearance cards. Kenya Corey, you're recognized with National Waste and Recycling Association.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. It's so good to see everybody, even in these strange times and looking at everybody's eyes. Hi. I'm Kina Corey. I'm here on behalf of the National Waste and Recycling Association, the Florida chapter. That's your friendly garbage guys and gals, and also recyclers, too. We just really want to thank Representative McClure for being a champion on this issue. When we created the Solid Waste Act back in 1988, it was to push local governments to privatize when possible and when it's effective. And we've done a great job of that. And his bill is going to protect some of those small companies that can be displaced by local government action and just lose their entire livelihood. With regards to, about the negotiations, you negotiate your contracts ahead of time. What this law is addressing, this proposed law is addressing, is when a local government says, no, we don't want you in our community anymore. Not that you didn't do a great job. They've just decided that they want to take over that business. So sometimes they'll stretch you along and they'll leave it out there. And if I'm a small business person and I've got trucks and I've got containers that has been specially branded for that community, it's hard for me to move those materials around. So we ask for your support on this bill. It's a great step forward, and we thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mrs. Corey. Next, we have David Sarter. He is a proponent of the bill. Now, members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on the bill? Ranking Member Goff Marcel, you are recognized.
Thank you, Chair. This concerns me again because of the local government component of it, and I really liked the conversation that you had with Representative Joseph. So I, at this point, I'm going to vote no on it, but I may change my mind if we can clear up some of that language that gives the local governments more negotiating power. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Bartleman, you are recognized.
Yes. Since the Florida League of Cities has decided to remain silent on this bill, I'm going to vote yes, but after hearing the discussion, I look forward to hearing about the amendments in future bills. Thank you.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. McClure, in light of the question raised by Rep. Joseph and also my own concern with what was stricken from the bill, I'm here to represent my residents and also local government to make sure that we don't put any additional burden on them, especially now during this pandemic time. I will not be able to support the bill today, but I look forward to hearing more conversation on it.
Representative Benjamin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks for bringing this bill. And I don't want you to just, when you say you're going to talk to Representative Joseph on this issue, this is a serious issue, because here's how the courts will typically look at this when it has to come to interpretation. Courts, although it's not ruling law, they don't have to follow it. They'll go back and say, well, the language was there, and now it's not. So it must be the intent of the legislation or the legislator to strike that behavior. And then that becomes a problem if you're saying that it's not. And that becomes a problem any time that there's an issue of vagueness within a statute. So I don't want you to gloss over it. It is a serious issue. Those who practice before the courts see this happen all the time. And so I want to see that language placed back in there so there is no ambiguity or there is no misinterpretation of the intent of this particular bill as it relates to that particular subject matter. Thank you.
Seeing no further debate, Representative McClure, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief, and to your point, Representative Benjamin, I assure you I'm sincere in continuing the conversation and making sure that we're all comfortable with this. This is simply to keep our small businesses that are operating in a free market going. This doesn't affect existing contracts. This doesn't affect existing franchises. So these are our small businesses, ones that we're fighting for daily up here. But let's make sure we're in the right posture. Representative Joseph, you have my word. We'll continue to work on it.
Representative McClure, having closed on the bill, Tory, please call roll on this bill.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Bartleman?
Yes.
Benjamin?
With that promise, yes.
DeSegli?
Yes.
Gialombardo?
Yes.
Goff Marcil?
No.
Harding?
Yes.
Joseph?
No for now, but I'll work with you to make it a yes. Thank you.
Mello?
Yes.
I'm sorry, can you?
Mello?
Can you do that one more time?
Yes.
Okay. Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Woodson?
No.
Hart?
No.
Chair Toledo?
Yes.
14 yeas, 4 nays.
By your vote, House Bill 331 is reported favorably. Congratulations. Next, we will take up CS for House Bill 55 by Representative Overdorf relating to building design. Representative Overdorf, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. House Bill 55 is building design, and essentially this prohibits local governments from adopting design and aesthetic ordinances for single and two-family dwellings. These are for open lots, so these are not within a historic district, not within a CRA, and not within a current PUD or current neighborhood that has an HOA associated with it. This has been basically put forward because we'd like to have somewhat of an affordable housing issue associated with this. Ladies and gentlemen, that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Representative Hart, you are recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. As an affordable housing provider, can you tell me how you think this impacts our affordable housing development?
You are recognized.
Yes, ma'am. Currently, within some counties, they're requiring in open lots for homes to have rafters that can support solar, that even though solar is not actually planned for that, there are other municipalities that are requiring for a for an electric car charging station to be placed in the garage, even though they may not have an electric car. So these are all different things that are actually being put forward by various municipalities across our great state that are causing a cost to increase for a house.
You are recognized.
Thank you very much.
Do you have a follow-up?
Yes.
You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you. Are you willing to exempt overlay districts? Because in my neighborhood, we have quite a few overlay districts.
You're recognized?
There's the issue with the overlay districts is that it doesn't go through a fair amount of planning, and additionally, you could go in and buy an open lot that you believe has no restrictions associated with it. And all of a sudden, the local government will say, well, we're going to put an overlay district across here that says every home must be white. And that is an issue that could actually play out. We've also, so that's why we've really tried to work with various folks and putting forth, again, the historic districts, a community redevelopment area. If they want to plan out that area there, it goes through, it gets a lot of neighborhood input associated with that. So for overlay districts, there's less of a ground truthing associated with it, and it could just be placed over an entire county for that matter.
Do you have a follow-up?
Just one question.
You're recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. Have you spoken with any of the local governments or organizations as to this preemption that it's going to cost for our local governments back home?
You are recognized.
If you're asking me if I've talked to local governments, absolutely. I've had conversations also with various representatives from League of Cities, et cetera. We are working through some issues associated with this. Last year, we had the League of Cities was neutral on this at the end of it. We are currently, again, working through this process. I've had multiple conversations with them. As far as individual cities, here and there, I'm contacted by a city. There are some that are very positive about it, and there are others that that are very protective of what they currently have.
Representative Bartleman, you are recognized.
Yeah, so when I researched this bill, my concern lies with those local municipalities. For instance, St. Petersburg requires front porches, not in a historical district, but in a certain part of the community. Winter Park requires garages on the side of the homes. It's not in a historic district, but it's something that they do. Coral Gables has like lots of character, they have requirements. And so they are very concerned about this taking away their ability to do these things. So I guess my question is, is there something in the bill or a modification you can make to address the specific needs of the communities?
You're recognized.
Well, again, I mean, as we go through the process, we have, in fact, yesterday my telephone call with League of Cities, Coral Gables certainly came up. Again, this is for an open lot and where there typically is not a home. There might be some structures within Coral Gables that are considered historic, and as a result, you would not be able to modify those. Those that are open lots, however, that is an area that, again, probably is few and far between knowing Coral Gables and how well it's built out. That being said, there may be some opportunities that we have with those municipalities to work through some issues there. And again, that was part of our conversation literally yesterday, was talking about that specific municipality. However, knowing that there are literally 1,000 municipalities throughout the state of Florida, I can't tailor a bill to one specific municipality when we're sitting here in the state legislature.
I understand.
Any other questions? We received two public appearance forms. Jane West with 1,000 Friends of Florida. Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Benjamin, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. These are mostly aesthetic requirements that you're talking about?
Yes, sir. So I'm sorry.
You're recognized.
So these are everything from glazing is required on a garage door to you're only allowed to put a certain amount of windows on the front facing in some municipalities. There is an example already brought up that says where you are allowed or not allowed to put your own garage on an open lot. And those are things that it's hard for me to justify and also for, as I look at this, to justify.
Madam Chair, follow up?
Yes, you are recognized.
And what do these aesthetic requirements do with regards to making homes affordable?
You are recognized.
So as I said earlier with Ms. Hart's question, it, again, depends on what they're doing. Again, we've got electric vehicle charging stations required. We have an increase in shutters and different things along those lines. All of these have increased costs associated with building a home. And they are not part of building code. They are not part of a requirement that actually makes the home safer. It is just what that particular municipality said, hey, this is an open lot. You're not part of a neighborhood. You are not part of a PUD. You're not part of a community redevelopment area. But we just want you to have these anyway. And that drives up the cost of that home every time we add additional items to it. When you have to make a rafter that can stand a solar panel on top of it, whereas normally you would have a rafter that is, say, associated with building code, can withstand hurricanes, is built to Miami-Dade standards, it actually increases the cost associated with that as well.
Madam Chair, follow-up?
You are recognized for follow-up.
What impact would this have on municipalities' current comprehensive plan?
You are recognized.
So comprehensive plan is really looking overall, and I'd have to look into that for a absolute 100% complete answer on that. But comprehensive plan is more of the character of the county, overall regulations associated with it. It is not building design and building code associated with it. There's two different things that we're talking about. This does not affect zoning in any way whatsoever, and does not change that you could put a different kind of zoning within the area there whatsoever, a different kind of structure. This is single family and two family structures only.
Madam Chair, one more.
You're recognized for follow-up.
How does this go to a city's ability to dictate, in a sense, how they want their city to look?
You're recognized.
So again, many cities will create districts, whether it be a redevelopment area, historic district, et cetera, if they really want to have that. Again, if you want your entire city to look red, even though you have open lots throughout that, and these areas are not within a neighborhood or not within a CRA, this bill would not allow for that to happen. Now, if I can finish there, but if you are within a CRA that you said this is the red CRA, every building could be red within that CRA. Now, it's going to be an interesting city, but that certainly is up to the character of that city.
Any additional follow-up?
One more follow-up.
Come on.
Yeah. You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A midpoint. You're saying that these things are highly aesthetic. They don't go to the actual structure of the project or the structural soundness of the project. So why not an exception, or we carve out something that says, you know, as long as a project is structurally sound, then these aesthetic things can be negotiated, or the city must negotiate in good faith or something with regards to these things that are highly aesthetic and not actually going to the structural soundness of the project. Would you be willing to have some type of compromise with regards to how a midpoint between what's structurally sound, which should be the concern, and what's aesthetically pleasing, that's also a concern of the cities?
You are recognized.
So to have a midpoint means that the city needs to be willing to compromise as to what they're going to or not going to allow. At this point in time, the city is not compromising and saying, you have to have this, you have to have that within these areas. So in order to have that compromise, the city needs to back off. They have not chosen to do that at this far. And again, I have cities that are absolutely fine with this legislation in here and then these particular standpoints. But to say that we are going to have a negotiation requires the other side to say, yes, we're willing to do that. At this point in time, we haven't had that from these municipalities. Now, that being said, we are certainly still in conversations and with League of Cities, et cetera, and we'll see if we have some compromises before the end of before the end of this legislation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Joseph, you are recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So when on the topic of exceptions, when this bill came before us last year in the form of HB 459, you had included, or there were some exceptions specifically to address the effects of affordable housing projects and the Florida Building Code compliance, but I don't see any of that in this year's version. Any reason for that?
You are recognized?
As in, what else would you like to have within this?
Okay, so...
You're recognized for follow-up?
Thank you. So it's not actually a follow-up question, but a response to this question. Is that okay? Yes? Okay, great. So I could talk to you offline about some of those in a little bit more detail, but I was just wondering if that was intentional or if you even noticed or...
You're recognized.
So it was definitely not intentional. It's duplicative, if you will, because we're looking at this as if we're decreasing the requirements for certain things, as I've noted a couple of different times during this discussion. It actually brings down the cost of that home, but it does not bring down the building codes associated with it and or the strength of that home. I need to reemphasize that everything within this, setbacks, the building code for that particular county or statewide has to still be observed in this. So the affordable housing component is really brought in as a whole part of this bill in saying that, for one instance, we have a municipality that says that if the driveway is, I think, greater than 40% of the front yard, it has to become pavers. It can't be anything else. And that's a quite a large expense for various homeowners, as you can imagine.
That's fine for now.
Seeing no further questions, we have three appearance forms. Jane West with 1,000 Friends of Florida. You are recognized.
Good morning. Jane West, Policy and Planning Director for 1,000 Friends of Florida. As a quick introduction to our incoming lawmakers, welcome. 1,000 Friends is a statewide nonprofit organization dedicated to smart growth management and cultivating sustainable communities. We are here to voice our opposition to House Bill 55. As the former chair of the City of St. Augustine Beach's Planning and Zoning Board, I can tell you that residents take an immense amount of pride in the uniqueness of their community. After all, it's why they move there. It is undisputed that an overwhelming majority of Floridians support home rule. This bill takes that away at a micro level. No longer will the well-intentioned residents and volunteers of a community's planning and zoning board be able to regulate basic architectural aspects that ensure their city has a sense of place. A homogeneous slate of generic homes inures primarily to the benefit of one sector, large-scale conglomerate developers who balk at fine-tuning their housing product to comply with long-standing community standards. One example that was given at a committee stop and repeated again by Representative Overdorf here today was the expense of pavers, which were a requirement for residential homes within a municipality. Oftentimes, pavers are used to offset the impervious surface posed by the new structure's square footage that covers just about every possible square inch of the lot. The point of this is not aesthetic so much as reducing neighborhood flooding. So it's not just design. There are practical reasons that are specific to a community. Inflicting a generic one-size-fits-all standard helps the developer's bottom line, but not necessarily an affordable housing component. No one is forcing developers to build in these unique and vibrant communities like Coral Gables. They are choosing them because that is where the market is thriving. And now they want to bypass the very attributes that draw them there in the first place. The compromise that Representative Benjamin seeks actually already exists. It's called a variance. And will it affect the comprehensive plan? Absolutely, because the comprehensive plan's goals, objectives, and policies require consistency with the land development code. Many of these attributes are codified within that land development code. So yes, it has implications on the comprehensive plan. Please support Home Rule and vote no on the passage of this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. West. Next, we have Dane Bennett with the Florida Home Builders Association, waving in support. Next, we have Taylor Beal with the City of St. Petersburg, waves in opposition. Members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on this bill? Seeing no, Ranking Member Goff-Marcel, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm going to have to vote down on this bill for the reasons that were stated mainly in the questions. I represent part of Winter Park, which was one of the cities that Rep. Bartleman mentioned. I also was a little concerned about if a city wants to require charging stations. There's a lot of cities that are trying to become more sustainable, and that's one of the elements that they're putting in there is charging stations. So for those reasons, I'm going to have to be down on this bill.
Thank you. Representative Woodson, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. Overdorf, there are too many pieces at this time that are unclear in this bill for me, especially those issues that have been raised, especially affordable housing, the CRA's issue, home rules, which is very important to me, fiscal impact on local government. For those reasons, I cannot support the bill at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Salzman, you're recognized in debate.
I just wanted to say on behalf of Escambia County, we appreciate the bill. Thank you.
Seeing, Representative Benjamin, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I hope that you've heard the concerns of those members who have talked to Home Rule and what it means to a city to be able to dictate how their city looks and how their city is sustainable. And I'm also concerned with how costs to build drives up costs to buy. I am concerned with that, and I would hope that both parties would continue to talk with regards to this bill and make this a better bill. I think there's a midpoint. I think there's a middle ground, and I hope that both sides reach it.
Seeing no further debate, Representative Oberdorf, you are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you so much, Chair. Just a couple items. This is not a, if you will, when I picture a developer, I picture a developer that goes in and buys a large tract of land and plans out a community associated with that. And many times, as our friends, 1,000 Friends pointed out, that those homes do look similar. But they are within a development that has a building code, if you will, associated with that. Covenants and restrictions, homeowner association, et cetera. What this bill addresses are lots that are literally, you drive down the street, you see one lot here, one lot there. These are previously platted lots that we're talking about. We're not talking about creating an entire new neighborhood. That is the design of this bill. To address Ms. Woodson's issue, there are no CRA issues. CRAs are covered already. This is not going to be taking place within a CRA. The rules of a CRA stay, even though this bill, hopefully at some point, will pass the House and get the governor's signature. CRAs will stay. They will stay in place and all the rules associated with that. When we're talking again about affordable housing issues, this is intent to lower the cost of a home and to keep that home within a building design that is lower cost so that you can build that home. But again, it's not tailored towards your D.R. Hortons of the world, not to pick on D.R. Horton or your Pulteys. This is tailored towards that single family home builder, double family home builder that is within an open lot in a city. Members, thank you very much for all the questions. I have a lot to think about, and obviously we will be taking that back to various things and various people. I kindly ask for your support.
Representative Overdorf, having closed, Tory, please call roll on the bill.
Representatives Barnaby?
Yes.
Bartleman?
No.
Benjamin?
No.
DeSegley?
Yes.
Gia Lombardo?
Yes.
Goff Marcil?
No.
Harding?
Yes.
Joseph?
No.
Mello?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes.
Persons Malika?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Woodson?
No.
Hart?
No.
Chair Toledo?
Yes.
12 yeas, 6 nays.
By your vote, shows CS for House Bill 55 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And last, we will take up House Bill 541 by Representative Buchanan relating to veterans' preference in employment. Representative Buchanan, you are recognized to explain the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. It's an honor to be with you here this morning. This is a Veterans Employment Tract Act, and it authorizes state entities and political subdivisions to waive the post-secondary education requirements for employment and any current member of the Florida National Guard, Army Reservist, or honorably discharged veteran. If the person is otherwise qualified for the position, the bill further requires political subdivisions to develop and implement a veterans recruitment plan and to establish annual goals for full use of veterans in that agency's or political subdivision's workforce. And Madam Chair, that is the bill.
Thank you. Members, are there any questions on the bill? Seeing no questions. Oh, sorry. Representative Joseph, you are recognized.
Thank you. And I want to make sure I'm talking about the right bill. This one takes the doctors out of it, right?
You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. Joseph, I believe we were conversing via text over this.
Correct.
So would you like me to...
Okay. So let me ask the question, because it is the right bill that I want to ask the question on. So it takes a couple of professions out of the exempted category for it, and I was just wondering why you pick certain professions over the other. The example that you and I talked about previously was about doctors versus lawyers, and you're welcome to answer that question just so that we have it out on the record. But I guess I'm just trying to figure out why doctors at all? Why not leave them as exempt? That's all.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Medical doctors, they're licensed, they're regulated through the executive branch agencies of which the laws enacted through the legislature help empower that. The lawyers are licensed and regulated exclusively through the Florida Supreme Court. So I hope that helps answer your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the only follow-up I would have to that, so I'm generally supportive of the bill. I guess I'm just trying to figure out, have you had any input from any doctors' organizations about that particular provision, number one? And then number two, what opposition do you have at all to the bill? Thank you.
You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would certainly love to get some of that feedback, and to date, I have not had opposition to this bill.
Any additional follow-up? Representative Benjamin, you are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the bill. I'm just wondering, what is the bill seeking? What's the problem that the bill is seeking to fix or issue that is seeking to improve?
You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative, thank you so much for that good question. I believe there's so much great experience that our veterans get out of their opportunity to serve. And we start looking at in certain positions, a 2-year post-secondary educational requirement. If these folks are qualified in every other way and their life experience has helped brought them to a place where they're the best candidate, they should have the opportunity to take that job. Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any additional questions? Okay, we have two appearances. Ranking Member Goff Marcil, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just what you just said, so if there's two candidates and they're up for the job, did you just say that would they have to hire the veteran even if the other one is more qualified? Is that your bill, or they're just have preferential
You are recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to answer that question, as it relates to two candidates, it allows them to waive that two-year post-secondary requirement in an instance where they're qualified in every other way.
Seeing no additional questions, we have two appearance cards. Dan Hendrickson with the Tallahassee Veterans Legal Collaborative. He's not here. He waves in support. And we have Alejandro Gonzalez with United Way of Broward County, waves in support. Members, we are now in debate. Is there any debate on this bill? Representative DeSigley, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Buchanan, thank you for bringing this good bill forward. There was a real vet that had an issue, applying for a position. He served 8 years in the Navy. And, to his credit, he reached out to several members of this legislature to essentially, give you this idea for this really great bill. So I'm very supportive of this for all the obvious reasons. And, the one thing that is so great about this specific committee is that the great work we do for our vets. And so this is just another way for us to honor them and make sure that we're taking care of our vets, and I think that's important. So thank you for bringing this good bill forward.
Thank you. Additional debate? Representative Joseph, you are recognized.
I don't think I conveyed this in our conversations, but I like it, and I like it a lot.
Thank you, Representative. And Representative Woodson?
Thank you, sir, for bringing this bill to our attention. It will only make a positive impact on our veterans, and we owe that to them, to support them and be there for them. So thank you for that.
Representative Benjamin, in debate.
Hoorah.
Any additional debate? Okay. I really, really love this bill, and thank you so much for doing everything for our veterans. They deserve it. You are recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I so much appreciate the great comments made here in debate and some of the great questions. It's truly an honor to carry this bill. So many veterans pay the ultimate price, and it's an honor to have the opportunity to carry this piece of legislation, and I look forward to everyone's favorable support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Buchanan, having closed on his bill, Tory, please call roll on the bill.
Representatives Barnaby?
Hoorah, yes.
Bartleman?
Yes, great bill.
Benjamin?
Yes.
DeSigley?
Yes.
DeLombardo? Yes. Goff Marcil?
Yes.
Harding?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Mello?
Yes.
Overdorf?
Yes, ma'am.
Persons Maluka?
Yes.
Sabatini?
Yes.
Salzman?
Yes.
Snyder?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Woodson?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Chair Toledo?
Yes.
18 yeas, 0 nays.
By your vote, please show House Bill 541 reported favorably. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Members, thank you so much for your work today. Our next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, March 9th. Once we adjourn, please remember to exit promptly so the room can be sanitized. Seeing no further business before the subcommittee, Representative Hart moves we rise, and without objection, the meeting is adjourned.